Hello, hello. Welcome to Pod Bless Texas. I'm Lillian Salerno here with my co-host, Kendall Scudder.
Hi, how are you?
How you been doing this week?
I'm doing good, Lil. You know, now that all the televangelists have prayed about it and coronavirus is gone, I think it's great that the community's just really rallying outside without masks on. Just really rallying.
Please. So many people are going to get sick if they keep at this stuff.
This is a powder keg.
It is. Well, let's see. Today's May 22nd, and I believe somewhere around June 22nd, June 29th, it's going to look a whole lot different.
How's it going to look?
Not good. Yeah. People are going to get out there too quick. People are going to get sick. And yeah, they don't need to be opening everything up. People need to wear masks. So we're excited today because it's Friday before Memorial Day. We have a great show. We have the executive director of the Texas Civil Rights Program.
Project. Texas Civil Rights Project.
Mimi Mazziani.
Who's
a brilliant lawyer and director, and she's going to be on later, and we are just happy to all be around. Been a big week for news.
Has it, Will?
Yeah.
Anything happened?
Yeah. Vote by mail. Donald Trump just being Donald Trump. Texas, though, one of the reasons we're having Mimi on is she's great, but she did a wonderful piece in the Washington Post where she talked about how the whole country needs to be watching Texas about what we're doing on this vote by mail. And it just got tons of attention. So it was a beautiful piece.
This is the dumbest shit.
Why can't people do the right thing? They just can't.
I really like to I have these moments where I just really like to think that I can count on people just to do the right thing and make the right choices. And then Texas happens.
I know, but it's our Texas. And we're the change we've been looking for.
Is that how you got appointed to the Obama administration?
Yeah, I'm saying that over
you
and over.
You quoted him in your interview?
No, I did not. But it is like we're the only ones who are going to take this stuff. I mean, if Donald Trump's reelected, I'm out. I've given my best
shot. Where are you
going
to go?
Probably Mexico. I love Mexico.
You can go anywhere in the world to start anew and you're going to Mexico?
Yeah, I love Mexico.
Do you know how many people come here to not live in Mexico?
Mexico's great. It's awesome.
I've been to Cabo. I really haven't been to many other places in Mexico.
I love the people, love the climate, love the everything. Yeah.
I feel like if I'm becoming a political refugee.
Where would you go?
You know, I don't know.
Are you trying to go to Europe or are you talking? I wouldn't go to Canada.
Why?
If I'm going to leave the U.S., why would I go to Canada?
Because it's a lot like the U.S.
Yeah,
it's just not.
I know, but that to me is like me saying the U.S. is terrible.
I'd want to find some exotic island.
Tahiti or something.
Something that
you don't like the sun, so what are you talking about?
Well, I want to go somewhere that the few dollars I have are worth a lot more than they are here. And where, if I go there, I can just kind of live high on the hog and, you know, just...
Have servants and stuff?
No. No.
Are we talking Thailand or Indonesia kind of
thing? Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
That might be fun.
American, especially males, go there for servants.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking, how do I get to keep this social distancing thing, but in different capacities? Uh-huh. I could, build a house with a moat. Where nobody can come in and no one can bother me. That'd be nice.
Or you could go to a place like Germany that seems to have gotten this under control by using something called science.
Here's the thing. I'm poor now, and I don't want to move somewhere where I'm still poor. Okay. I want to move somewhere where the small dollars I have are maximized.
So you need a developing country.
Maybe so.
Yeah, pretty much, for sure. Yeah, or the dollar.
Where can my dollar be stretched the furthest? Well, that's where I'm going to move.
We don't know what.
Maybe I could buy my own island in the Philippines for $16.
Yeah, but there's some wonderful islands there. I've been there. Yeah, beautiful islands.
Okay, great. Yeah. Then that's where we're going to go, Philippines.
When I was in the Philippines, I was snorkeling, And this is a true story. This was 2000, a long time ago, maybe 2002. I mean, like people say, oh, you're just snorkeling, you see, but I mean, I saw this starfish and I picked up this starfish that was like this big, like natural, like, you know.
Wasn't an artificial
starfish? No, I mean, I didn't have to go down and dive 30 feet, and they just brought it up to where my friends were, and they're like, yeah, it's great. Those are everywhere. What's the big deal, Lil? I'm like, what? Starfish? And, you know, you put it back, but it was just awesome. You don't take away the starfish.
You don't still have it?
No.
No, you get it back.
No, no. But anyway, there's places like that. So maybe undeveloped places in the world.
And then we could develop it. We could...
No.
Oh, no, wait. This is where things go bad. Never mind. We're not going to do that.
And therein lies the problem.
Yeah. People like us think like that way too much.
We just go there and live.
And then let them do their thing and us live within their scope.
Right. Yeah, I'm here for that. Their scope, but we don't have to work because our dollars make more sense.
That's what I'd like to have.
Yeah. So,
no colonizing.
No more colonizing.
It's in my blood. I can't help it.
That East Texas colonization. It runs deep, deep, deep.
I can't believe I just said that.
Anyway, it's been a great, 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 great news week, and we're excited. So let's
great start. News week.
Great.
But what happened in the news, Lil?
Let's see. Let's start with Hit the Headline. Coronavirus in Texas.
All right.
Yeah. How many Texans have lost their life with this?
So as we have done throughout the several last few weeks, here are the stats for Texas that we have so far. That'll put the rest of our conversation into context.
Yep.
720,928 tests have been administered in the state of, in the state of Texas as of today, Friday, May what, 22nd?
22nd.
52,268 have tested positive, and then 945 more than the day before, 8,417 more than just a week ago. So still on the rise. We have yet to have a week where we have reported these numbers and it was not on a steep rise. 1,440 Texans have died, 21 more than the day before, 224 more than just 1 week ago. So that's where we stand. And bars open today.
Yeah, we saw. We drove past some that were open. Bars, bowling alleys, other businesses. Really.
Oh, that's the next headline. Sorry.
Yeah, just about everything's open, right? I mean.
Yeah, just read the next headline.
Okay. Next headline. Texas bars, bowling alleys, and other businesses begin reopening today.
Also, aquariums.
I didn't think about that. What about the zoo? Is it open?
I guess. I don't know what the difference really is between an aquarium and a zoo in the law. Like, statutorily, I don't know what the difference is.
There's fish in the aquarium. Yeah, right?
I understand that, but like, statutorily, I don't know the difference between a zoo and an aquarium.
Yeah, probably nothing. I mean, they probably let people into the zoos also.
Yeah, but it's like, so now you can go to a bar. I think they have to have the 25% capacity. They've increased the capacity of occupation of restaurants to 50%. So,
outside, you can sit like right next to people. If you're sitting outside in a restaurant on the patio.
And you know what? If the owner is a complete idiot with no regard for society, you can just sit wherever you want to, no matter where you are.
I mean,
are
there like moderators or mediators?
The state doesn't have any enforcement.
Okay. So people can just do it.
I'm sure if it's really bad, people can call the police and the police can show up and ask people to disperse. But has that happened?
Well, when that happened before, they went and got their haircuts done there. All right.
We're all gonna die, and I'm kind of fine with it.
Next headline. Governor Greg Abbott lifts coronavirus restrictions for travelers from New York, Georgia, and other hotspots.
This was one that I felt flew under the radar. People didn't talk about this much this week. Yeah. However, there are states that are very severely hit right now, including states like New York. We had travel restrictions that were put into place so that if you traveled from there, you had to quarantine for 14 days. All travel restrictions are gone now.
Yep. So I bet you they'll reinstate those.
So if you're coming here from a hot spot, you know what? Just go to an all-you-can-eat buffet and just cough all over it.
Oh, no. All right.
This is just, what are we doing right now?
It's sad. Anyway, let's go to the next one. Let's get through it. Next slide. Texas unemployment rate hits worst on record at 12.8%. Wow, I just was thinking if it's ever been that high in my long life.
So don't look at the next line because I put the answer to this question. When was the next highest? So it has never been 12.8% before. What was the next highest?
I would think in somewhere around 1986 or 7, I haven't read it, when the oil crisis happened.
Okay.
It would probably have been around 10. What did I say? I didn't read it, but I'm just thinking.
November 1986, 9.2%.
Oh, not bad for a girl from Little Elm.
So this is 3.6% higher?
Wow, and it was bad in 97, because I'd started my first company in 1984, and we got just hit like everybody did. But you know what? I don't remember there being very much access to capital or money or unemployment benefits back then.
Yeah. Well, it is now the highest it has ever been on record. The number of Texans filing for SNAP food assistance doubled in April.
Whoa.
To 417,468 folks. And since the week ending March 14th, just shy of 2.1 million Texans have filed for unemployment benefits, more than the entirety of 2019.
Whoa. Those people are working hard, though, I have to say, at the unemployment office.
Are.
I mean, that's a grueling, grueling job.
I mean, the state's not in good shape.
No. And the oil prices being down. I mean, we're in a heap
My
of
question
trouble.
Is, at what point do we. I understand coronavirus, it's rough, it's a whole thing. At what point do we stop blaming coronavirus for the bad economy and start blaming leadership for failing us? Like, when is that cut off? When is it appropriate to start doing that? Because
a response to it, you mean?
Well, I'm just saying, like, there are countries, we aren't the only country that was hit by coronavirus, right? But our economy is struggling more than any other country's is because their response to it was not in a manner that crippled them like this, right? The way that we responded to it or failed to respond to it has crippled our economy. But if I were to say, you know, how dare Greg Abbott, how dare, you know, President Trump for failing our economy, immediately you're going to see a lot of people kind of tense up about that and say, you know, coronavirus, we're all dealing with this. At what point is the divider? When is it okay to start realizing that this is really a failure of leadership?
It is a failure of leadership, and I think we're probably within 60 days of everybody recognizing that, especially when there's been no leadership from the top in these states. It's like it's just a bunch of independent actors and a state that's a united country where people go across state lines, and so you can't have three different policies. And so I think people are going to figure that out when we get hit with a second wave, if not in 60 days for sure in September, October, which is just so sad because all these kids are going to go back to school. Everybody's thinking it's going to be okay. It's the expectation. I wish they would lower people's expectations so then we can prove everybody wrong and really do a great job. Instead, people are like, oh, my kid's going to be in school. No, they're not.
I don't understand what their plan is. I think that's what's really frustrating to me, too. Is
no
like,
one
I
does.
Well, I know, but like, what do they see as an end game? Like, do they see beyond this week? Like, do they expect, are we just supposed to live with coronavirus until a vaccine happens? Is that their plan? Everybody just gets sick and some people are going to die, but there will be a virus, or there will hopefully be a vaccine in the next couple of months? Is that the plan?
I think lots of people think that's the plan, and that's why you keep hearing people that say, you know, there will be a vaccine by December, and everybody's counting on that, which is going to be virtually, it's impossible.
So we just have to have 6 months of
really bad
living thing. With a pandemic and just get ready and hope that the vaccine's here on time?
That's not realistic.
It's not.
The other thing is that I think the plan is a more political plan, that the coronavirus is going to be utilized by the Trump administration to get him reelected, and he's going to just slice and dice it, not related to science or good policy, just to get elected. I mean, somebody's been putting out on Twitter, I don't even know where this is coming from, but these just terrible, you know, back and forth of Americans just berating each other, those that have the mask and don't have the mask spitting at each other. I mean, this is going on throughout this country. We are just a powder keg for just civil unrest. It's just terrible. And I think we'll see some of that this summer. So, yeah, happy times. Okay, next headline. Senate confirms that U.S. Representative
God, John please be some good news.
U.S. Rep from Texas, John Ratcliffe, Director of National Intelligence. Who would have ever thought when that kid was in his high school that he would be head of National Intelligence?
Who would have thought just 1 year ago when he had to withdraw in disgrace for not being qualified for DNI that he is now officially appointed to that position?
No Democrat. I don't think any Democrats voted for him, which was
it's problematic. 49 to 44.
It's problematic when we don't have bipartisan support on positions like that.
Well, they used to have bipartisan support to even get confirmed until Mitch McConnell changed the rules of the Senate.
It's really bad when you have that trusted position like that. I mean, it's just unheard of.
So now the most unqualified person in this fucking Congress is now running all of our intelligence agencies.
Yeah, well, he'll be loyal to the president. That's for
sure. He's from Heath, Texas, which was inside my district when I ran. And that now leaves his congressional seat vacant. I remember in our last episode, I mentioned a couple of people that were looking at it. I did hear confirmation that Justin Holland, State Representative Justin Holland, not interested in it. So he's passing that. There are three people that have already stepped up and put their name in the running for that position. Two of them were congressional candidates in different districts during this primary. One down in Houston that lost in March is running for that seat, and then one in the 32nd, Floyd McClendon, ran against Genevieve Van Cleve, and he is also seeking
not
that.
Not Van Cleve, Collins.
Van Collins, whatever her name is. I don't have to remember her name. She's not going to be a congresswoman, so it's a non-issue. But anyway, so it's mostly people that don't live anywhere near the district, but it is widely considered one of the most conservative districts in the state of Texas. There is a Democrat in that seat, Russell Foster. I'm certain that he would appreciate your support because, you know, we got to fight. We got to slug there. Fine. It's a hard district, but the Republicans are circling. They're swarming like sharks.
Oh, next headline, David.
Whoever gets that seat's going to have it until they die. And so that's why it's a big deal, right? Like it's very hard, near impossible.
Is there any way we
could
get a good Republican to run over there? Like somebody who's not toxic, not Trumpy?
Well, name one.
I'm trying to think, but nope. Strauss.
You think Joe Strauss will run in Texarkana? The district goes from Sherman to Texarkana.
Well, I mean, if anybody else is moving there to go.
My country.
Yeah, you're part of the world. I guess not. All right, moving on.
I grew up in this district. Maybe I should be the Republican.
Maybe you should.
Appointed to that seat.
Yeah. They'll watch a few episodes of this, and they'll just think,
yeah,
hey,
You think I'll make it past a Republican primary?
No, I do not. Next headline and my favorite, David Dewhurst. David Dewhurst, former Lieutenant Governor of
Texas. This is not the last headline.
I don't. My favorite, I said.
Oh, you said the last one in my favorite.
Okay, well, I am like the other one, but anyway, that's fine. David Dewhurst, what happened, Kendall?
You're the one that reads the headline.
Lieutenant Governor, former Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst, the poor guy, his girlfriend, many years younger, 40-year-old, what's her name again? Leslie Ann Karen?
Did you not pre-write this headline, Lil?
No, I just thought about it.
Girlfriend of former Texas Lieutenant Governor arrested for elder abuse.
So, if you guys remember, David Dewhurst is the guy that ran and allowed us to have Ted Cruz because David Dewhurst lost to Ted Cruz during the Tea Party movement. And then, his losing brought us Ted Cruz, which was unfortunate. And then again, when he ran against for the Republican primary, for Lieutenant Governor, he lost against Dan Patrick. So we have both of those guys.
David Dewhurst was widely considered to be a very mainstream, moderate, kind of Bush-like Republican, a lot like Joe Strauss, and they would work together. It's kind of why Texas didn't have a bunch of bullshit for a while.
Yeah.
They did a couple of things, but it wasn't as bad as some states like Alabama and whatnot. So,
more like it is now.
After the Tea Party wave, Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst wanted to seek the Senate seat that was vacated by Kay Bailey Hutchison. Mm-hmm. Whenever he ran for that seat, Ted Cruz pulled a massive upset. It was a massive upset because David Dewhurst, worth $200 million, was a sitting lieutenant governor. It was defeated by a no-name solicitor general whose only notoriety was arguing to make dildos illegal.
Yeah. Why did Cruz beat him again?
Tea Party Wave.
Okay. And they wanted to get rid of any moderate Republicans.
And then the whole the Ted Cruz crew ran Dan Patrick against Dewhurst in 2014 in the primary, and Dewhurst was defeated.
So Dewhurst must hate him like we hate him.
I imagine. But he's been pretty quiet about it. And then Dewhurst is 75 years old, and he is dating a 40-year-old. He has a bit of a history
with the young ladies.
He likes them young.
Likes them young and psychotic. Hey. He dates the same kind of women you do. Heavy drinkers. They like to hit. So what'd she do? She came home, or they lived together. She hit him several times, including with the pot and pan on his elbow. Then she came back and broke a couple of his ribs. He didn't report or anything. He just had to go in because he started having chest pains. Went to the doctor, and they said, how'd you break these ribs? My girlfriend...
Hit me with the frying pan. My girlfriend is from a cartoon in the 1950s, and she hit me.
Anyway, so now the district attorney of Harris County will be deciding whether to prosecute. He says he has no hard feelings against the abuser and that she has a lot of good qualities, and he hopes she has a good life.
It's an entertaining headline because it is salacious. I will say, poor David Dewhurst.
Because he was hit.
I mean, it's not okay.
No, no one should do
that. I mean, domestic violence isn't cool.
No.
Not funny. And, I mean, especially, you know.
But why did he let her back in the house again? Like, she hit him? She leashed? I guess she could just say that on the other side if she was a woman.
You never know.
What's going on.
Yeah. You never know what's going on in a relationship.
You really don't.
And you know, for someone like, if you're 40 years old and you're dating someone that's 75,
people do that.
I'm sure it's not because he's worth $200 million. I'm sure it's
nothing to do with that.
You know, the awesome sex or something.
Power.
Yeah, but what power? He's lost. He's done.
Well, money gives you power.
Oh, that's fair. You know, you should. It doesn't matter why you're in the relationship. Clearly the 75-year-old's a bit powered down in that situation. Even if you've got all the money just physically, you know,
I'm
I mean...
sorry, but 75 is, I know, from your angle, from my angle, it's not that old.
I'm sorry, literally 2 months ago, you were on record talking about how Joe Biden was way, way old, ancient.
That's true.
75.
Well, they are different characters, though.
I'm just...
David Dewhurst is in a lot better shape than Joe Biden.
I'm just saying, like, okay. My point is, like, is it old or is it not old, Will?
I don't know. It's old when a 40-year-old can whoop your ass. Female.
So it's old.
Anyway, the district attorney of Harris County will decide whether to prosecute, but I don't know why it made me laugh. I mean, I don't want to
Well,
get
she,
hurt.
She actually
like a
is a...
psycho.
Well, she's activist in her own right. She worked for John Cornyn. She's worked for several Republican Congress members and members of the legislature. So she's a bit of a political figure in the Republican Party of Texas as well. So it's extra juicy gossip for
So for
guys.
Texas, we can expect to see her running for an office someday.
Yeah, probably so. I mean,
unbelievable.
What a, it's so ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
You know, I don't know.
Her mugshot even looked good. Like, she's a looking woman.
Sure. I mean, David's going to get his money worth. I don't know. But... no,
right.
It's just, yeah, I do want to say, laugh. Not domestic violence, never cool.
Never cool.
Never cool.
No. Okay. All right, next headline. Commissioners appoint Christopher Hollins, interim Harris County Clerk, beginning on June 1st. Yay!
We spoke about how the Harris County Clerk, Dr. Diana Troutman, resigned from her post because of a health concern. She has now been replaced by the Vice Chair of Finance for the Texas Democratic Party, Chris Hollins, who has said he won't run for another term. He's simply filling the term through the year.
Then he gets elected by...
Oh, he isn't running.
No. But then somebody, when he leaves after November, he gets, is there an election for it? I would imagine so. Or is it an appointment by the
My understanding is that he's going to have this position through the end of the year. Okay. Whatever
good.
That means.
He'll do a good job, and he's a young guy that'll make sure we get every vote.
Very nice guy. And he, we've actually reached out to him. He's going to be on the podcast soon. So
okay, cool.
You'll get to hear from Chris. I know him well from our time that we've worked together in the Texas Democratic Party. And
he's a lawyer from Houston.
Yeah, the reason, this may sound dumb that we're talking about a Harris County clerk or whatever. County clerks are a big deal in Texas, whether you know it or not. Here's a fun little civics lesson. A county clerk, in a lot of times, actually facilitates elections. Sometimes it's a tax assessor collector, sometimes it's a county clerk, sometimes it's an appointed elections coordinator. But in Harris County, the county clerk is the person who facilitates elections. So this is the person that makes sure that people have access to a ballot, that the county's doing voter registration efforts, and trying to encourage people to turn out to vote. With a good county clerk or a good head elections official, you can significantly increase some voter turnout. Places like Travis County had Bruce Elfont as their tax assessor collector, ran some big programs for voter turnout, and now Travis County has some of the highest voter turnout in the state, highest registration rates in the state. They do programs to go and register homeless people to vote. Right. Like they have some really big programs there. And so if we could do that
with
as
Harris
Democrats wow. in places like Harris and Dallas County, if people get it together, you know, Republicans wouldn't stand a chance in the state anymore. And so the
Yay.
Biggest county, the third largest county in the country, biggest county in the state of Texas, now has, or continues to have, a Democrat in charge.
Right.
Someone like Chris Hollins, who we feel pretty confident will kind of grab the reins on a lot of this registration
and
effort.
She did so a good job, the gal that left.
Yeah, she had a lot to clean up because Stan Sandert's a
it's,
cartoon.
Well, it's tough. Harris County, tough anyway.
Yeah.
Tough as a, because it's huge. It's
and it just has started to flip a Democrat.
Right,
so.
Right.
So anyways, big things hopefully will happen in Harris County.
Yeah, that's great. And that was Hit the Headlines. And when we come back, we'll have Texas Civil Rights Project Executive Director Mimi Marziani. Who also had a beautiful Washington Post piece published this week. So stick around. Welcome back to Pod Bless Texas. With us today is the Texas Civil Rights Project director and author of the recent Washington Post editorial, Will the Texas Supreme Court Let Republican State Leaders Deny Our Right to Vote? The marvelous Mimi Marziani.
Marziani! Hey!
Thank you for joining us today on a Friday afternoon on a holiday weekend.
Yeah, of course. As I said before we went on air, I wish I were with y'all drinking those beers, but you're inspiring me.
We're big supporters of you definitely drinking alongside of us. So if you've got a beer at the house, or maybe an entire bottle of wine, just pop that cup open.
You may have other activities by the end of the day. My last call before this call.
Have you been basking in your media glory this week?
I have gotten quite a bit of comments, but I think some of the ones that have been most touching is I have gotten a couple of emails just out of the blue. One man named Brad, I don't know who he is, but he just sent me a little note thanking me on behalf of himself and his family for making our democracy better. And things like that really touch my heart.
Which is the opposite of the way that I usually feel about people named Brad.
And the opposite of people who usually seek you out after you write an opinionated piece.
Exactly. No, it was a great piece. And I've always, you know, you've been in the D.C., you know what that bubble's like, and I've lived there a long time. And the Washington Post, so nice to have as your daily paper. Mm-hmm. I loved it. But when I saw your post, I mean, there are so many expats in Washington, D.C. There's so many Texans. So I know it just brought a lot of joy. They're still fighting down there.
Well,
what motivated you to put pen to paper and write that editorial?
Honestly, I'm pretty angry. When you look across the state, I mean, I've been focused on voting rights my whole career. So I have done this day in and day out well over a decade. And, I've been involved in a lot of pretty pitched voting rights battles. But the current battle about whether or not people can vote by mail during a global pandemic that is killing tens of thousands of people has just left me flabbergasted. And you look across the country and leaders of all stripes, Republicans and Democrats, are saying, of course, people have to be able to vote by mail right now. I actually pointed out in my piece, a Republican candidate for a Republican candidate for Congress in Houston, and she's been bucking state leaders on this and saying, you know, that she's going to help everybody vote by mail so they can stay safe. Because this is an issue about the health of our democracy and the health of Texans. So it is just crazy to me. The state is fighting us tooth and nail on this.
It's the fight seems so targeted here in Texas, right? I mean, I was talking to my friend in Tennessee. They've got, as you know, also issues. But Texas, it just seems so venomous the way that they're going at it this time.
Yeah, you know, I think the thing that is really disheartening is that years ago, the people at the highest level of Texas's government made a calculation. And they decided that, you know, they're looking at explosive population growth. And we all know the population growth in Texas has been fueled by immigrants, immigrant families, people of color, younger folks moving to Texas or moving maybe from some of the rural areas into the cities. And the folks running the state looked at them and thought to themselves, I don't think they like what I have to say. And rather than try to change their message, they're trying to make it harder for those people to vote. And it is just, it's like offensive to our core American values.
So why should someone who's not very familiar with voting by mail, you know, I see this argument a lot on social media where it's like voting by mail and absentee voting are two different things, and they really don't understand what voting by mail. Why should average Joe who doesn't understand really how all the vote by mail stuff works, they just are uncomfortable by it. Why should they feel comfortable casting a ballot by mail?
So they should feel comfortable because people have been casting ballots by mail for, I don't know the exact stat on this, but I'm 38 years old and I'm gonna go ahead and say longer than I've been alive.
Sure.
It's a really time-tested method that you know, members of our armed forces have used, students, other folks that are out of the, traditionally have been out of the county during election time have used. And in more recent years, like last decade or so, we've seen states go primarily to all mail elections, and voting by mail has proceeded over all this period of time, you know, millions and millions and millions of ballots without a hitch.
I spent some time in Oregon and I saw the governor of Oregon, Kate Brown, on whatever the talking shows, just talking about it's such a non-issue there. I mean, it's just, it's not even a thing. Like, it's just no one questions the validity.
Right.
And that's the part we'd like to hear from you. I think there's people that are just so confused, Mimi, about the safety of elections with, you know, the signature piece. I spoke with the Secretary of State when I was in Oregon, and he was telling me that the percentage was so low. I want to say like maybe less than 0.5%. Like, and it was an absolute affirmative duty of the county clerks or their equivalent to call when they didn't see something that matched up. And then, you know, I mean, this idea that someone's not going to check up on that. I mean, there's just this idea of this fraud. And I think that's what, you know, when I speak to my, you know, people that aren't in politics, they're just like, they're worried of somebody harvesting votes or all these things that just, we just don't have any experience of that really happening at any grand level.
That's exactly right. And I mean, look, to be sure, everybody, you know, whatever your political affiliation, all of us want our elections to be fair and accurate and secure, full stop. But as you pointed out, there are mechanisms to make sure that voting by mail is secure. And that's why we've been able to do it successfully across all of these years and with so many people. And so, in Texas, there are ballot boards, local ballot boards that compare the signatures full disclosure, we have a separate lawsuit against the Secretary of State because there's some problems with that process right now. Mm-hmm. But the problem's not a fraudulent problem. The problem is that the ballot boards don't tell you before they throw your ballot in the trash. And so we have maybe a different problem than what what people have been thinking about. But the bigger point, I think, is there are mechanisms to make sure people are who they say they are. And the incidences of misconduct in our American elections are so, so small. And of course, you know, it is, you know, beyond disappointing to me that President Trump has been using his bully pulpit in recent days to rail against voting by mail. And I think he's been contributing to this confusion and this idea that voting by mail is not secure. I think it's important to point out that President Trump himself voted by mail in the last couple of weeks because he is now a resident of Florida. So it is very odd to me to think that he obviously thought the process was secure enough for him to use it. Right. But at the same time, he's been stirring up an awful lot of confusion without putting forth any facts to back it up.
I get such a supreme annoyance with people who have a point of view or a perspective that is solely built out of laziness. An example I'll use is like people that just don't like the Democratic establishment or the Democratic Party, and they think the whole system's rigged against it. Well, you know what? Run for delegate and get on one of the committees and fix it, right? Or maybe sit in on a committee and just see who the people are. I say that because I think it's the same kind of mindset with people who say, well, all of these vote by mail things are so rigged and so hard and I hate it and it's bad. Well, then why don't you sign up for your local ballot board? All you got to do is go and sit in the room. You could be a poll watcher while they're comparing all the signatures. It doesn't have to be something that you're so afraid of because you don't understand. You being a little bit less lazy would solve your problem.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, people sign for a passport and they're allowed to go throughout the world as an American citizen without, by sending it in. And we don't have a lot of people talking about that. It's just crazy. But tell us where this all lays as we're here on Friday, May 22nd. Gosh, there's been it's gone back and forth three times this week, no?
Yes. There is so much litigation. Actually, I keep joking, and hopefully they don't mind me saying this out loud, but the litigation has been so complicated that I was going back and forth with the Washington Post editors. They're like, wait, will you explain that again? I don't understand. I'm like, I know, that's because it's so confusing. So there's a number of lawsuits right now around vote by mail. I'm happy to talk about all of them, but I'm going to just look at the last week. We'll just look at the last week. So the Texas Civil Rights Project brought a lawsuit in the end of March. I will also note that I feel like I am in quarantine time. So I'm like, I have no idea. I don't know the dates anymore. I was like, it was like the 15th day of quarantine, whatever that day was.
It could have been 6 years ago or yesterday. We're not
sure. I know. I think I need one of those old school prison movies where I'm like carving on the wall every day that goes by. I don't know what that is. So we and some other parties brought a lawsuit in late March, saying a pretty straightforward argument, basically that the law already allows people to vote by mail if they don't have immunity to COVID. That's a physical condition. And the language of the law actually explicitly says that you can vote by mail if you have a physical condition that means you are likely to get sick going in person. And so our argument was pretty straightforward that, this means that we can all already vote by mail and we just wanted the judge to confirm it. We then had a hearing all on Zoom, of course, where we brought in an epidemiologist, God, that word is hard to say, and, our lawyers argued. And at the end of it, the judge agreed with us. The judge said, you know what, you're absolutely right, that as long as the state has, you know, declared, and you know, the state has actually declared this, the health emergency, as long as this is going on, people absolutely are allowed to vote by mail under the existing laws. So that's been one, like, arena of the fight. The state has been fighting its tooth and nail. The state tried to claim that order didn't apply to it by looking at some technical legal arguments. So we went up to the next court up, the appellate court, and we said, look, the attorney general is sending threatening letters to community groups and sending tweets saying that people will be prosecuted for wrongfully voting by mail. We think that's intimidation. We think it's in violation of the court order. You've got to do something to stop them.
I think it's blatantly illegal and he should be in a jail cell for it, but keep going.
Right. I was going to say, I have a good audience here. So, and the 14th Court of Appeals agreed with us and said, Texas, you have to stop that. You are covered by this order. The law allows people to vote by mail right now and you can't stop them. Texas then, and this is where we get to last week. So that came out last Thursday. Texas ran to the Texas Supreme Court and said, you've got to stop this, you know, at least until we have more time to brief it. And the Supreme Court paused. So what that means, and so here's where I'm going to get real technical as a lawyer, so this might be confusing. But so what that means is basically the Supreme Court says, we are no longer going to prohibit Texas from trying to stop people. That's very different than saying people can do it. It was just talking about what Texas is allowed to do. So then separately, Texas ran to the Texas Supreme Court and said, Texas Supreme Court, and this is very unusual that you would go straight to the Supreme Court, but they clearly, I think, believe they have an advantage going straight there. So they said, Supreme Court, we need you to slap down the counties that have been responsibly, in my view, telling people that they are allowed to apply to vote by mail. Dallas, Houston, Travis, El Paso, Cameron. You need to jump in right now and tell those counties that they can't do this. And we had a hearing on that argument on Wednesday. And of course, you know, interestingly enough, you know, Texas is arguing, part of their argument is, you know, you have to tell the counties not to allow people to vote by mail because everything's hunky-dory out here. Of course, we did the hearing by Zoom because none of the lawyers and none of the judges want to be in the same place. And really sadly, I don't know if you saw this news this week, but one of the Supreme Court justices actually tested positive for COVID-19.
Her husband.
Yeah. So, you know, we're not...
You're not making this up.
Yeah, we're not making this up.
I mean, it's just absolutely ludicrous and very clear to me that while there is a faction of people that just simply don't understand the process and think that it is, you know, something that's easily rigged or whatever, the people that are making these arguments in the first place that we're fighting in court are not those people. Right. They are the people that are simply trying to stifle folks from voting.
Right. So that's exactly right.
And if I'm the county clerk in Travis County or Collin County or Cameron County today, am I getting enough mail-in ballots ready for July 14th runoff? Because we've only got 49 days, 50 days.
So this is another...
No, early voting, so yeah.
I'm not as good at math as you are, Lil.
But not a lot of time.
It's like 35 days, I think. Yeah. It's pretty fast. So... this was another point that's been brought up in the case. When we had that hearing in mid-April, the county said, look, we need an answer by May 1st. I will note it's May 22nd today, by May 1st, because, I mean, anybody who's ever run a lemonade stand, you have to do, you know, you have to prepare for these things. They have to buy some envelopes. They have to train their staff. And, you know, they needed to know how much of an uptick to expect. Now, a couple of things. I mean, as all of this has been going on, look, the counties haven't been able to wait. And, you know, the folks who work for these elections offices, the vast majority of them, they want to help people vote. And so they've been accepting, they've been telling people they can vote by mail. People have been mailing in their ballots. They've been processing them. I know that you know, the Texas Civil Rights Project has worked with community groups to advise some of the counties on what sort of budget they need. And so we know that those processes are happening. I do worry that the litigation has disrupted these processes. That's right. That's right.
Well, I mean, the thing is, they did have an answer by May 1st. You know, right. every county elections official in the state had an answer by May 1st. It's one dude, it's Ken Paxton, that's sitting in between Texans and their ability to cast a ballot.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, I wouldn't let Greg Abbott off the hook either. He's, well, sure. I mean, he's grown, he has too. A long track record of violating voting rights. And I think there's no doubt that this case is going to the very highest levels of Texas's government.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I usually say that Texas state government is run by a bunch of dicks, but I actually received a phone call this week from a listener of ours whose last name is Dick. And he said that he didn't appreciate me regularly referring to them as a bunch of dicks and would ask that I instead refer to them as a bunch of assholes.
Well,
and
there you go. Okay.
So the state's run by a bunch of assholes.
So what, I mean, where are we on, I guess they appealed it to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals and we're waiting that, which we know the answer will be.
Well, so this brings up a different court case. So there's one other thing that's hanging out there is there's also a federal court case. There's a couple of federal court cases around vote by mail, but the one that was moving this week involves the main claim is that the vote by mail law, which allows you to automatically vote by mail if you're 65 or older, but not if you're younger, constitutes discrimination that's illegal by the 26th Amendment, which was the one that allowed 18-year-olds to vote. And so Judge Beery, you know, bless his heart, as you say in Texas, he released a 70-page opinion that starts with quoting the Declaration of Independence and goes on from there and said, you know, I think you're absolutely right. He did not try to hide his, I will say, displeasure with what he was viewing as attempts to make it very difficult for people to vote in the middle of this, global pandemic and economic crisis where, quite frankly, the health of our democracy is more important than ever. Right. So that decision, as beautiful and flowery as it was instantly stayed by the Fifth Circuit. And I don't have a lot of faith in, given that that's a novel claim, but we'll see. I think the more interesting thing to keep an eye on is what the Texas Supreme Court is gonna do. I have to tell you, I had it, imagine that we would, well, I still believe we'll get a decision from them very quickly. It could come, really any minute.
Really? Okay. So you think it's...
Wow.
But to be clear, until the Texas Supreme Court tells them otherwise, the counties could continue to tell their residents that they are allowed to vote by mail if they're not immune to COVID, if they have this physical condition that makes it likely that they're going to be ill. They're allowed to keep saying that and allowed to keep processing these vote by mail applications. So that is still happening and will continue to happen until the Supreme Court tells them otherwise.
Well, Mimi, the work that you and the Texas Civil Rights Project are doing for the people of Texas is completely valuable and priceless, and we just really appreciate all that y'all do. We always know that whether we agree with you or not, you're doing the right thing, and we really like that.
You don't agree with her on something?
Well, I mean, sometimes the liberals get all mad about what these civil rights groups doing things, you know?
Like,
it's all about just, they're on a mission to protect people's civil rights. They don't care if it's left or if it's right. It's just doing the right thing, and we just really appreciate that. But you don't get to leave yet, because before you go, you have to play everyone's favorite segment. It's called Obsessed. Obsessed, where each of us are going to talk about one news story from the other's politics, or was it that we've been completely obsessed with? And as always, we have to start this segment with Lillian Salerno. Lillian, what's something this week that you've been completely obsessed with?
Well, I usually do something national because of Donald Trump's the president, but I decided not to.
Oh.
Yeah. I I had to go to the store, and I live out in Collin County in the burbs. And I went to a, not a Whole Foods, but not a Kroger, somewhere in between. And I had my mask on. Lots of people had their mask on.
Good.
Which was good. I was going down the produce section to buy my strawberries, and I look up, and a guy has a Star Wars mask on. Okay. Only, like, he's just...
He wasn't wearing
no clothes. That's exactly what I was thinking.
So he had, like, golf shorts on. He was totally, like, taking the piss out of this mask thing. And I love humor, as you know, but I just started laughing. I just thought he was so funny. He was definitely not on my side of the political spectrum, but he was just like, just picked up my, and so I, of course I had to talk to him and ask him. I just want to know how people live. And I also wanted him to vote for my candidates in Collin County. But he was like, well, they said a mask. They didn't really specify. And I'm like, dude, this plastic mask is doing nothing.
Oh, he was wearing like a Halloween mask?
Halloween, Star Wars. Okay.
I thought you were saying like a mask that was themed Star Wars.
No, no, no. It was a Halloween plastic mask. It was just, you know, rub it in. And, you know, then I realized he was on the other side of the aisle from me. But it was funny. It was funny. And I got a big laugh out of the story. And I got to give my position to him that, you know, he must have a kid. How did he have this mask? Let's set a good example. And he was like, you know how bad it is for males to wear these masks? So my other obsess is that apparently males have, they think they look feminine with these masks. And that has been this whole thing. And I'm just saying, think about all the great things, like surgeons wear masks. That doesn't make them weak. You know, firefighters wear
not
masks.
Wanting to die is so gay, dude.
What the fuck is that?
Anyway, so that was my obsess this week. Wear your mask, people.
I'm sorry. I'm going to talk about fragile masculinity for a second. I've been seeing that on social media too. Never did it register to me once that wearing a mask was a little gay. Like, you know, but like, I do see all these little incels all over the place sitting around talking about how they're worried that wearing a mask suddenly makes them like put penises in their mouth. I don't know what their problem is.
But anyway, so that's out there. So
yeah, okay.
Everybody wear a mask. We love you if you wear a mask.
What a journey.
Yeah. So that was my
good obsessed, Lillian.
It was really funny.
That's a great obsessed. Thanks. Mimi, top that. What's something right. that you've been completely obsessed with?
All right. Now I'm going to cheat and do two because it reminded me, I think my favorite article I've read this week was about, I think it's in the fashion section of the New York Times, but it was talking about how Nancy Pelosi has been coordinating her masks to her pantsuits and like making this like statement, both like a fashion statement, but also like a public health statement. But I guess also I hadn't really thought about a statement about fragile masculinity, but I'm guess that's a statement too. And how she's buying most of them from a local mask artist, I'm going to go with, mask maker, an artist who's, for everyone that Nancy Pelosi buys, they donate one, I think, to Johns Hopkins. So it made me, going back to what you said before, I don't agree with everything Nancy Pelosi does, but she is a complete badass and such a woman, you know, just such a strong woman. And it was one more moment where I tipped my hat at her. The other thing I was going to say that I'm obsessed with is, in our neighborhood, we've been getting these flyers. I have little kids, 4-year-old and 1-year-old, but we've been getting flyers around the neighborhood that the neighborhood's having a parade at 6:30 to honor all the graduating seniors. So I'm gonna go mix a cocktail and make some signs and cheer for them. And I thought
awesome.
That was really cute. I know.
Yeah, I love that.
Somebody said to me this week, there was a parade for a friend of mine who had a birthday and everybody did that. And someone said to me that there aren't a lot of good things happening. Like she isn't saying that there's a bunch of bad stuff happening, which there is, but that's not what she was referring to. What she was saying is there isn't a lot of stuff that's like, that's a good thing to look forward to happening right now. And she's like, these parades are so important because it just gives us something to look forward to.
Yeah. Or our Zoom gradual.
Yeah.
Gradual. Our Zoom virtual graduations that we've all had.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
They're pretty bad.
Good obsessed, Mimi.
Yeah, thank you. It's a good game.
Get that like a pro. It's like you've done it before. Gun obsessed. My obsessed this week is the President of the United States testing positively for COVID-19. You heard me correct. He tested positively for COVID-19. And you may have missed it in the news because it doesn't quite mean what you think it means. I'm going to go ahead and pull up the direct quote. This week, after taking a test, a COVID-19 test, the President of the United States spoke to reporters, and here was his quote. "I tested very positively in another sense this morning. I tested positively toward negative, right? I tested perfectly this morning, meaning I tested negative. But that's a way of saying it. Positively towards the negative." So
that explains a lot.
Really thrilled to hear that our president has tested positively for COVID-19. And I cannot wait to see another headline where he has tested positively for COVID-19 as well.
I just hope
he keeps testing positively.
All I can say, if you haven't seen her, watch Sarah Cooper. She's a comedian and she's been doing, like, it's just her and her house, but she reads out these quotes from Donald Trump and they are hilarious. So she did that one last night.
They're on TikTok,
right?
They're
on TikTok, yeah.
Oh, that's the one, yeah. She's great.
So that's what I've been completely obsessed with. And that was obsessed! If you have something that you've been obsessed with at home, make sure to send your video of 30 seconds or fewer to info@podblesstexas.com. We might play it on the next episode if you bother to send one in. info@podblesstexas.com.
Well, Mimi, thank you so much for joining us today. And if people want to follow you or follow your work or donate to Texas Civil Rights Project, where can they find you all?
You know, the easiest thing is our website, which we just redid. So feel free to compliment us. I think it looks good. Amazing, amazing digital manager. But, you know, we have lots of content. We have a pretty active blog. There's ways to donate, volunteer. My email is right on the website. So if you feel like dropping me a line, feel free to.
Okay. Well, thank you. And how about you, Kendall? How can people reach you?
If folks want to follow me, they can follow me on Twitter @KendallScudder, on Facebook @KendallScudder, on Snapchat @KendallScudder, on Instagram @KendallScudder, on LinkedIn @KendallScudder, on TikTok @KendallScudder. I'm all over the place, guys. I'm hipping with it.
I really only
tweet, so just go to Twitter.
And you can follow me through Pod Bless Texas or through Twitter. That's the only place I hang out is with Lillian_Salerno. And thank you, Mimi, so much. And for our listeners, please have a great weekend and subscribe and tell your friends and have a blessed week.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks, y'all. Bye.